Morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. To certify the class as plaintiff presented it to the district court, plaintiff was required to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that every member of the class saw the hardware statement, that every member of the class bought or subscribed to FSDC solely because of the hardware statement, and that every member of the class got zero value from the many FSDC features that were rolled out during the class period. Plaintiff didn't come close to shouldering his burden as to any of those showings, much less all of them. The certification order should be reversed as to the damages class for three reasons. First, plaintiff failed to show by preponderance of the evidence that all class members were exposed to the hardware statement. This case is like Maza and not like Tobacco 2. The district court certified the class based on the assumption that all class members would have seen the hardware statement's appearance on a minor subpage of Tesla's website. No FSDC purchaser or subscriber was required to go through that subpage to purchase or subscribe, and the only record evidence was that the subpage was infrequently visited by unknown visitors. The district court acknowledged that the evidence of class-wide exposure, even including the hardware statement's appearance on the autopilot subpage, was, quote, not ordinarily enough to establish class-wide exposure for a traditional car manufacturer. It thought a different approach was warranted because Tesla does not engage in traditional advertising. But nothing in this court's precedent relaxes the applicable standard. To the contrary, cases including Maza, Castillo, Gutierrez, and Walker, among others, apply the same rule across diverse media and campaigns. As this court put it in Walker, the alleged misrepresentation must be so, quote, pervasively disseminated that all plaintiffs must have been exposed to them. Or put differently in Maza, the plaintiff's evidence at class certification must leave, quote, little doubt that almost every class member has been exposed to defendants' misleading statements. A, quote, practical inevitability, as the California Court of Appeals
counsel,
put it
I just want to make sure I've got a couple of things clear. First of all, we're only talking about a class of people who actually purchased the software package.
Or subscribed, correct.
Okay, all right. And the only information on that would be available to them on the website, right? We're not going and talking to somebody on the at the car lot, because there is no car lot.
I disagree, Your Honor. I think there's evidence in the record, in fact, that Mr. LoSavio, before he purchased his Tesla, mm-hmm. visited Tesla showrooms and had conversations with Tesla personnel at the showrooms about FSDC.
And are the salesmen trained to try to upsell on this?
I don't know the answer to that question. I think he testified that he engaged in conversations about FSDC. There's also evidence in the record that there was information about FSDC in popular press, in tweets. The district court cites YouTube and Instagram, Tesla's YouTube and Instagram pages, but there was no iteration of the hardware statement in any of those places, not on YouTube, not on Instagram, not in any of Tesla's tweets.
It's just that this is not a cheap package.
Correct.
It's a little unusual. I mean, it's not like an ordinary feature. It's not something that you would have previously purchased if you'd owned a Cadillac or a Ford or something. If you'd bought a prior product, this is going to be unique to Tesla. It feels like there's some kind of that you can infer that there is some obligation of inquiry here on the part of the consumer.
So. I apologize, Your Honor. Let me answer that question in two ways. The first one is the same was true in Maza. Maza also involved a $4,000 add-on product, an automated braking service. And the court there didn't say, well, everyone in the class who bought this product must necessarily have seen some of the challenged misrepresentations by virtue of the fact that they paid $4,000 on top of whatever very expensive Acura XL they purchased at the time, and that suffices for us to infer that they must have seen one of the misrepresentations. So that's point one. Point two is the hardware statement doesn't stand in isolation to other statements and representations that were made about FSDC that plaintiff and others in the class necessarily would have seen or may have seen and relied on. Mr. LoSavio, for example, testified that he was interested in the enhanced safety of the FSDC products. There's also the cross-country statement, which was a statement about the timing for making particular functionality available. The class wasn't certified as to that statement. So as the case comes to this court and as it came to the district court, the real question is, can you infer merely from the hardware statement itself, the only one on which the class was certified, that class members were exposed to that particular misstatement. And I don't think it's enough to say, especially given the surfeit of information about different sources of information, the surfeit of evidence about different sources of information that customers relied on, and also the number of different statements that Mr. LoSavio attributes his own and the class's purchase decision to, that all of them relied on the or were exposed to the hardware statement simply by virtue of the fact that they purchased or subscribed to FSDC.
Yeah, it's just you've got to your client has a very different sales model here. It is a high tech company. It relies on it being regarded as a high tech company. It has chosen a different way of selling these cars and of advertising them. And you've got this this online brochure that you can't get in paper. And you're not advertising it on TV, and you don't have a car lot. So there's just fewer opportunities for you to inform yourself about acquiring a $4,000 option on your Tesla.
I disagree. I think the record is full of the entire premise of the complaint is that the information environment, as plaintiffs' expert call it, is so suffused with information about FSD and FSDC because of Tesla's unique ability to proliferate the environment with their representations. Even if that were true, it's not true as to the hardware statement. There's tons of other information that the complaint attests to and the record attests to that relates to FSD. The district court's error here, among others, was inferring from the fact of purchase or subscription that every class member was necessarily exposed to the hardware statement to the exclusion of any other information that they could have seen or relied on for purposes of making the decision to purchase or subscribe to FSDC. So I think it is an impermissible inference, and it's a clearly erroneous inference, for the district court to conclude simply by virtue of the fact that class members purchased or subscribed to FSDC that they were necessarily exposed to this particular statement. This case began as a much broader set of allegedly material misstatements, and it was winnowed by the time of class certification just to the hardware statement and the cross-country statement. So this case has been from the beginning about different allegations of different alleged misrepresentations that would have induced a reasonable purchaser to make the decision to purchase or subscribe. As the case came to the district court and as it comes to this court, it is only about the hardware statement. And so plaintiff's burden with respect to exposure was to demonstrate through a preponderance of evidence that all class members were necessarily exposed to that statement. If a class member only saw representations about safety, the enhanced safety of the FSDC offerings, and they purchased it, they are in this class even though they never saw the hardware statement. If a class member wanted this because they're a first adopter and they just like being at the vanguard of these sorts of things, and they were interested in the things that were described, for example, in Walter Isaacson's biography of Elon Musk, an excerpt of which is cited in the record, and they purchased it having never seen the hardware statement, they're still in the class. They're still in a damages class. They're not eligible to be in that damages class if they weren't injured by the one statement as to which the class trial can proceed in this case.
How do these issues then affect the B2 side of the house?
So we're not making an argument. It's a really interesting question that I thought a lot about because we think of exposure as a B3 issue, but since there's a liability determination as to B2, one would think that you need the requirement of exposure to be shown class-wide. I think if members of the class were not exposed to the offending misrepresentation, they don't have the ability to seek an injunction or an injunction on their behalf. Our argument in the brief, however, with respect to the B2 class is a different one. It's that the injunction or the injunctive relief class that the district court certified violates the requirement of B2 that it be applicable to the class as a whole. And as Justice Scalia explained in Dukes, one of the requirements of that textual language of B2, this is not an ascertainability issue, but one of the requirements is that the class composition has to be sufficiently knowable that you have an injunction that operates as to B2. And Justice Scalia said in his opinion in Dukes, if you need to constantly monitor and readjust the composition of the class roster for injunctive relief purposes, it is impermissible under B2. And that's the argument we make with respect to the
B2. No, the plaintiffs say, well, that is just kind of an ascertainability argument, and courts have rejected that as a requirement.
Ascertainability requires the plaintiff, if ascertainability applied, it would require the plaintiff to identify the 3,000 class members who would be subject to the B2 injunction at the end of the day. We're not arguing that as a requirement here. We've never made that argument. The issue is the injunction that the district court is going to enter and supervise with respect to the B2 class of a knowable dimension such that it will apply to the entire class during the duration of the injunction. And Justice Scalia says he locates this requirement in the text of B2, and he says it is inconsistent with B2 to have an injunctive relief class where once you enter the injunction, you constantly have to adjust the roster of members of the class subject to the injunction based on criteria that are moving over time. And there was more certainty, right? Because the district court, and I think this court, had affirmed an injunction that applied as of the cutoff date of the filing of the complaint. Here, there are all sorts of these subjective considerations about whether, when, to whom, how a class member would need to attest to their future intention to purchase FSDC but for the hardware statement. And there's no certainty as to how that would be determined, but there is certainty that it would change over time.
I mean, isn't that just another way of saying that there are individualized issues associated with knowing whether somebody would view and rely on and care about these representations? I mean, it seems similar to me I'm not trying to make your argument. I'm more just trying to think analytically how these two things fit together.
So I think that there can be a B2 problem with respect to the shifting composition of the class without individualized issues. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess the question then I would have for you is this really the same type of problem that the Supreme Court was looking at in Dukes in terms of people needing to adjust the roster? It seems to me there you have a kind of updating over time problem with adjusting the roster. Here your argument is also that even at any present time, it's kind of unknowable for some of the reasons you gave with respect to B3.
Yeah, absolutely. Though I think that the former is better supported by the case law, and so is easier to argue an abuse of discretion than the latter. And so while I do think the latter is a problem, we focused here just, you know, picking our battles on abuse of discretion review as to that problem under Dukes. If I may, I want to reserve some time for rebuttal, but I do want to talk about the Comcast issue. Plaintiff failed to satisfy Comcast in multiple fatal ways, and I was struck hearing the argument before this one that the errors here and the deficiencies in the expert report are so much more extravagant than the issues that the court was discussing in the prior argument. First, plaintiff's damages model did nothing at all to tie or trace class members' damages to the hardware statement, the only actionable statement left in the case. The operative complaint alleges that the plaintiff and class members purchased FSDC not only because of the hardware statement, but also numerous other alleged misrepresentations, including statements about FSDC safety, the cross-country statement that the class was not certified as to, and the court either dismissed or refused to certify the case for everything but the hardware statement. For a class trial on claims predicated only on the hardware statement, plaintiff's damages model was required to attribute or trace damages to the hardware statement alone. This is precisely the fact pattern the Supreme Court confronted in Comcast, and it was also the fact pattern the court confronted in Lytle versus Nutramax. There were four alleged misstatements at issue, and the court endorsed the model that the plaintiff's expert had come up with because it was able, through its conjoint survey, another mechanism that plaintiff's expert could have used here but didn't and didn't even offer to do, didn't explain how he might do. But the conjoint was designed to identify the particular damages associated with each of the four specific misrepresentations in Nutramax. And so the court said that was more than enough at this stage, and that is why the court rejected all of the Comcast challenges to that damages model. I want to leave some time for rebuttal, so...
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Julie Fieber on behalf of the appellees. I have with me Catherine Amirati, and in the gallery we have Mr. LoSavio. Just to frame things, to start out, for 8 years, Tesla marketed and sold this expensive software package called Full Self-Driving by placing a single uniform representation front and center on top of the single web page that was available to consumers who were considering buying the product. Now, that statement is full self-driving hardware on all cars. That was front and center of its marketing strategy. The district court found Rule 23 predominance for class exposure, damages, statute of limitations, which appellants haven't discussed today, and also the injunctive relief under this court's settled law in Mazza, the Pulaski decision, Williams and Davidson. Turning to the exposure question, the autopilot page was essentially the front label for this product. This is a direct-to-consumer sales climate. This is an esoteric, unfamiliar to most consumers software product. Before people were going to be spending $5,000 to $15,000 to buy this software package, it's reasonable to assume that they went to the specification page, which is the web page. And for 8 years, that hardware statement was at the very top of that page in large type. Because
so how about Mazda, though? How about Mazda? How does this differ from Mazda?
It's very different. Mazda involved a four-year advertising campaign where it was on a web page and in brochures. It went to fragmented regional markets. And then there were third-party dealerships that the customers were interacting with. Whereas here, customers just interact with Tesla. There are no third-party dealerships. Mazda also involved, in some cases, disclaimers about the actual product. There are no disclaimers here. At no time did Tesla, during this eight-year period, ever put an asterisk or anything on that web page saying, oh, well, maybe the cameras and compute power don't actually work for full self-driving features for your vehicles, for the class vehicles. So it's a very different situation than Mazda.
I guess what's kind of concerning me about the position, your client's position, is, you know, normally in litigation, we, if you're going to complain about a statement, we say, well, you got to have seen it. Now, the law makes some, you know, allowances for that in some contexts, at least the front label of a product. We've heard, we know from tobacco, too, that it's if it's a decades-long advertising campaign, okay, we're going to have a reasonable assumption that you saw it. But this seems like a different thing altogether, and maybe it's just a Tesla-only rule that you're advocating for at the end of the day.
I would say two things to that. One is this court in the Gutierrez case looked at a four-year campaign that was on the webpage of Wells Fargo about the posting order of customer transactions and also was in brochures for a four-year period of time. And from that, inferred that there could be class-wide exposure. Well, the situation is even stronger here because this was common sense that any consumer who was looking to buy an unproven software is going to want to make, and for features that Tesla had not even rolled out yet, would want to know that the hardware, at least on their vehicles, was going to be able to have the camera and compute power to operate autonomously. So it's a pretty central feature. And in fact, the centrality is shown not just by its placement on that web page, but by the fact, for example, in the 2016 Autopilot conference, the very first words out of Tesla's CEO's mouth was the hardware statement. Basic news, all the cars now have the hardware.
But what relevance are the statements, you know, of Tesla's CEO to what somebody saw on a web page?
It's relevant because, and this goes to the second part of my answer to that, our expert, Dr. Goldhaber, who spent an extensive amount of time researching the record and who has decades of experience in these topics, looked at the information was out there, and his opinion is that it was a uniform, widespread, widely communicated message that included the hardware statement that did go out. Tesla was a sole source of information about the capabilities of its products that was picked, and its message, including the hardware statement, went out in the press and reinforced what customers were told about the hardware capability of the vehicles that they were buying and that led them to have the confidence to buy the FSD software.
What about the data that shows, you know, how many people were visiting the website?
That's consistent with our argument. This one webpage is getting tens of thousands of visitors every single month. Now, it's of no moment that, yes, there are millions of people looking at the Tesla website because there are a million reasons to look at the Tesla website. But the reason and the common sense reason to understand people are going to the Autopilot webpage is because they wanted to know what Autopilot did. And the very first statement on that Autopilot webpage in large type is all the cars have all the hardware needed for full self-driving. That was Tesla's way of selling this product. That was important to customers buying an unproven product where the features didn't even work yet. And frankly, to this day, they don't work.
Well, I'm trying to figure out kind of what would be the limits of this position, right? Because I take it your position is not that anytime is just something's on a website that someone's not obligated to click through, that there's going to be a presumption of reliance. I take it your position is, well, that's good, but we have more here.
Yes.
And the more is what?
The more is we have an expert who's reviewed the record. Notably, Tesla did not designate an expert to contradict Dr. Goldhaber. So it's our expert.
Did the expert do additional analysis or survey of any kind, or just more bringing his expertise to bear on what is called the information environment?
At this point, he looked at the record, he looked at the evidence that's out there, and he brought his expertise and his years of experience to that. He'll be following up in the next phase of this, now that we know what the class is, to do surveys to further back that up.
Now, okay, but so what else beyond the expert and the website would you point us to here as kind of limiting features of this case that would, because I have some concern that we just issue an opinion that says anytime there's a website and there's a statement on a website, there's a presumption of exposure and therefore a presumption of reliance, and lots of that would seemingly invite, you know, class certification in a manner that's probably not consistent with where the Supreme Court has told us. So what are the other limiting features of this case that you would flag here?
Sure. The things that are different here is the placement on the website, the fact that the website is the only place where a customer could go and find out all the details about all the features of Autopilot. And that's a pretty significant thing, because those details about what features do or supposedly work or don't work have changed over time. If you want to know that, you've got to go to the Autopilot webpage. The statement here is the very first thing on that webpage. Also, the significance is shown by the fact that it was highlighted by Mr. Musk in the announcement of the product. So that sets it apart. The fact that Tesla is a direct-to-consumer, unlike, for example, Honda in the Mazda case, Tesla sells directly to consumers. So it has a unique amount of control, and that was highlighted in Goldhaber's report. Also, the very unique situation here, this is a new product. People do not have real-world experience with it, unlike, for example, hair product. And at the time, and to this day, Tesla is advertising that this product has capabilities, but they're not there yet because there's regulatory delays. Notwithstanding, it hasn't actually applied for those regulatory certifications, but that's what Tesla was saying. Hey, you can't see this in action yet. It's going to be coming one of these days, but you can buy it confident that your car has the hardware to take advantage of that. And that really actually sets this apart. It's a pretty central promise.
Yeah, I guess the question, you know, someone could argue, look, actually Mazda had, you know, a number of different methods of communicating the same message. Nonetheless, the court still found it was insufficient under tobacco, too. It did not warrant the same presumption. So if that's the case, then why would this be appropriate to certify here?
Well, Mazda was a fragmented market, once again, and you had third-party dealerships. So Honda did not control what message was out there to customers. And then it was also a much different product. It's a braking system, but that's very different from an autonomous car, which, you know, we still don't have autonomous cars readily at hand.
Can I ask you about the damages piece of this?
Yes, I was hoping you would.
Yeah, go ahead. Give us your take on that, and I have some questions.
Well, first of all, it's undisputed that the vehicles don't have the hardware needed for autonomous operation. It was admitted, that's in the record, Musk admitted that they're going to need retrofits. And Tesla's been announcing new hardware versions that are coming out that are supposed to work with this new AI software.
Well, so is the expert's report keyed to the hardware, his assessment keyed to the hardware statement, or to some other statements that are no longer actionable, and at least as part of the class certification?
Well, the hardware, again, the test in California is it's got to be a substantial factor. It doesn't have to be the only factor. And the hardware statement is key to consumer decisions. It's material, as Dr. Goldhaber found in his opinion. It's key to consumer decisions to buy this product. If the hardware statement doesn't work, the product is effectively useless. And so it does satisfy the test in Comcast. Comcast dealt with four antitrust theories, four different types of behavior. That's not what we're dealing with here. This is one coherent set of behavior, trying to sell these cars by telling people that even though the features don't work yet, it will work on your vehicle once they come out. But the other thing is we're not relying totally on that. There's a couple other nuances here. One is, in this court's decision in Pulaski, for restitution, the time frame you're going to focus on is what was there at the time of purchase. And at the time of purchase, again, the hardware in the vehicles, the cameras and compute did not work. And so the value, the effective value of FSD to consumers who were purchasing it for the $5,000 to $15,000 that they paid, you know, it was an illusory promise. They didn't deliver. This is much more like the Makayev case or Allen or U.S. v. Kennedy with counterfeit arts. They did not deliver what they promised.
Yeah, okay, I take it this would be your same point on the full refund model, which is that model doesn't always work, but here it does because this particular feature, among other features, was a very important feature? Or
yes, well, that's true, but there is another argument. At this point, there's no evidence in the record that there are features that would offset. But if such evidence does come forward as we move towards trial, Mr. Stockton, in his report, has outlined a method to value those features, and that's in paragraphs 30 to 32 of his report. So it's not as if we've done nothing. We've not put all our baskets in the full refund model. There is a methodology that's a reasonable approximation. It meets the test set by this court in Pulaski, for example, that can accommodate any offsets that are proven as this case moves forward.
Help me on the B2 class, if we can turn to that.
Yes. I'd love to. If I may, one thing I'd like to point out on the B2 class and Dukes in particular. Dukes is a case where the 23B2 class that they were trying to certify actually involved a claim for individualized back pay. So that was a money damages remedy. And Scalia, focusing on that, said that type of money damages claim shouldn't be certified as a Rule 23B2 class. It more belonged under Rule 23B3. And that's simply not the situation here. We're consistent with this court's holdings in Davidson and DZ Reserve. What we're looking at is a class that's going to be defined based upon the stated future intent to buy the product if they can rely upon Tesla's manufacture or advertising down the road.
But doesn't that rest on these same assumptions about exposure that we're talking about in the B3 context?
Well, the class here will be people who have bought or leased FSD in the past who are interested in buying it in the future. And the assumptions of exposure are going to be the same for this class. I think the argument's stronger for this class, obviously, but it's going to rest on the same evidence of the proximity, the importance of the hardware statement to Tesla's advertising, and it's going to rest on Dr. Goldhaber's opinions. And the other thing I just wanted to make, the point I wanted to make about 23B2, in Dukes, they did say that where a claim can be resolved with a single class-wide order, that is a type of situation that is amenable to injunctive relief class. And that is a situation here where we're seeking a prohibitory injunction that would keep Tesla from misstating the capabilities of its hardware as to its ability to support autonomous driving. That's what we're looking for.
I mean, is that even a permissible injunction? It seems like an injunction just to comply with pre-existing legal obligations.
It's more than that. It is. And obviously the contours will be worked out as this goes, but as we phrased it and as in the certification briefing, it was to say, don't advertise your vehicles as having full self-driving hardware or full self-driving capable hardware until you actually have gone and gotten a government certification saying that these are autonomous vehicles. So right now, all Tesla vehicles are in SAE level 2. Which is the same as my Subaru. They're just an ordinary car. Maybe they have smart cruise control or something. What we're saying is you have to get the higher levels of certification before you can start doing this advertising that, hey, we've got all the autonomous software needed and so forth.
We've seemed to have taken you right to the end here. Let me see if my colleagues have other questions for you.
If you have no other questions, I'll leave it there unless you want to hear about the statute of limitations or anything like that.
Unless my colleagues have questions, I think we'll hear from your opposing counsel.
I appreciate that.
Thank you,
Your Honors.
Thanks very much, Your Honor. I think it sounds like a lot of the resolution of at least the exposure question resolves on the question of whether the district court could permissibly infer from the mere fact of purchase or subscription that all class members were necessarily exposed to the hardware statement as opposed to some other representation. that was made about FSD or information that they learned. And Judge Bybee, to go back to, I think, the very first question that you asked me, I just want to point the court to some places in the record, which we cite in our brief, where all of these multiple different statements that customers relied on to purchase FSD are reflected. You could look at paragraphs 16 through 19 of the operative complaint. That's at 4 ER 488 to 489, which are plaintiff's own description of what he relied on. It says that his purchase was motivated by representations that FSD technology was already as safe as or safer than a human driver. You could also look at Mr. Goldhaber's report.
Sorry, and what does that show us?
What it shows is that there were lots of different sources of information and lots of different stimuli to purchasing FSD. So the inference that the district court drew.
Is there any other place that they could have gotten as complete a statement as they got on the website?
So I
know we have some anecdotal things or things that show up on, you know, press conferences or.
I think that there's obviously plenty of information on the website about FSD, but it sort of depends on what a customer is looking for. If you're looking about safety, I don't actually know what the content of the autopilot subpage is about safety. But Dr. Goldhaber talks about the fact that word of mouth is critically important given the unique nature of Tesla's marketing strategy. And he talks both in his report and in his deposition about the importance of user forums, of chat rooms, of, you know, Tesla owner chat rooms or however they communicate with each other. Those are all sources where people are learning information about FSD. And I think the point I just want to underscore is the irrationality and the implausibility of inferring from the mere fact of purchase that they were exposed to this particular misstatement as opposed to all of the other information that was available for customers.
Let's suppose that the website was the only source of information other than word of mouth. So that if somebody, whoever was talking or conducting these chat rooms, that everything could be traced back to the website. Would that allow for a class?
I think that's a different fact pattern, and I also don't think that the inference necessarily holds there. People buy, I apologize.
It's just that some of the other things, I mean, you know, Elon Musk going out and making a statement, I'm just not sure it seems reasonable that some people go out and say, oh, I heard Elon Musk, made some statement. I'm going to go out and buy a $4,000 add-on when I buy my Tesla.
So I think again, the question is what particular statement moves a driver or a purchaser to make it.
But if somebody said, well, my friend just bought a Tesla and he researched this very carefully and went to the website and informed himself, and I think he's got good judgment, so I'm going to get one too. Can you include him in a class?
I don't think so. I think once you're talking about ad hoc oral communications about what people know or what they're going to purchase.
Even if it could all be traced to the same source.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's an expert issue about whether you could in fact trace it to the same source. But let me try to answer the question this way. The hardware statement is that, just to paraphrase it, that Tesla currently has all the hardware necessary to achieve full autonomy. For some drivers and for some purchasers of FSDC, whether it ever attains full autonomy like a Waymo going around San Francisco is immaterial. What they want is they want autopilot, they want auto park, they want smart summon, they want all of the features that FSDC has in fact delivered during the class period. So the idea that you can infer from the fact that customers are willing to pay for that product, where they got all of that value, where the appeal to them is different from a promise of full SAE level 5 autonomy, I just don't think you can make that inference. And there's nothing in the record to support it.
Okay, we've taken you over your time. Let me see if my colleagues have any additional questions for you. Okay, thank you for your presentation. We thank both counsel for their very helpful briefing and argument. This matter is submitted.
Thanks very much, Your Honor.